Welcome to Center Maryland's The Lobby. We are blessed with two of our favorite state elected officials in Maryland. They started a book club during the pandemic and have kept a lot of their colleagues and our even our lobbying community more educated, more engaged, and more connected. So we have Delegate Mark Corman from the 16th Legislative District, which is the capital of the world to many of people. That is the Bethesda area just outside of there, Washington, D.C. And then we're really psyched to have a Baltimore favorite from our Senate family. They let me get away with that on occasion. That is Senator Corey McCray from the 45th Legislative District. Mark Corman, Delegate Mark Corman, Senator Corey McCray, welcome.
It's good to be with you, Damian. Mark, I see that I got to get my swag gear up. This guy's got the Baltimore hoodie and the Maryland
hat. No, he's got the full Maryland going there. The colors kind of clash, but it's got a good Maryland theme going.
You can feel the effect.
You know, it's a deep overcompensation. You know that, fellas. You know that. Hey, listen, I brought you on because, first, I just wanted to brag to you a little bit. Right between your two districts in Columbia, Maryland, which is this third city that's really coming into play there, at the Meriwether District. You hear me talk about Meriwether all the time, Soulful Symphony, Darren Atwater. The Downtown Columbia Partnership and the Howard Hughes Corporation are hosting the region's premier book festival. And that's this October 10th at Colorburst Park, right at Meriwether Post Pavilion, right outside Meriwether Post Pavilion. And they have Pulitzer Prize winning reporter Dr. Nicole Hannah-Jones. You know her from the 1619 Project. She's going to be in conversation there with Andy Shalal, the head of Busboys and Poets, which I know, Senator McCray, you've got one right down the road from you. And Delegate Corman, I know you spend some time in Busboys and Poets. I'm a recovering busboy and poet myself, but I'd love for you guys and all your guests. This is a free event, Sunday, October 10th, Colorburst Park in downtown Columbia, Maryland, 11 to 5. You know, Laura Lippman, Nicole Hannah-Jones, huge authors from all over the place. Just wanted to welcome you all up the road there. One day we're going to get a BRT from Bethesda or Silver Spring to Columbia to Baltimore. But in the meantime, you guys can take an Uber out or get a ride out. We'd love to have you at Meriwether. It's a really exciting day for Jim Rouse's originally integrated planned community to have Dr. Nicole Hannah-Jones there. So just wanted to drop that plug in on you before we get started. Any reaction to that, gentlemen?
Two things. I mean, one, the book lovers in Bethesda would love to take the Purple Line to Silver Spring and then hop on that BRT line up 29 all the way to Columbia. And I know we can all make that happen if we work together. But I did want to give a quick plug for a book. I haven't read it, but I've seen it heavily promoted by one of our sort of local Marylanders. Len Lazarek wrote a book on the history of Columbia a couple of years ago, which is something that's sort of been on my long to-do list to check that out at some point.
Len is a resident expert of all things Columbia, and he's a treat to listen to. Senator Corey McCray, have you been down to that the new Busboys and Poets in Baltimore yet? Are you still waiting for somebody to host you there? Because I'd be happy to sign up for that task.
You know what? I was very close to having breakfast there. I think the hours didn't work out or something like that, but we were moving in that direction. I do have to get there. All of my friends have been there. I've seen all the pictures over social media. So I do need to move out of my little neighborhood and make my way over to the
43rd. You know, they let brilliant revolutionaries like yourself hang out with corporate flacks like myself. But they give you a quick 5 minutes and separate us. Talk to me, Senator McCray. What have you been reading?
You know what? Currently, I'm reading about, I just started it, Carl Stokes. He was the first Black mayor for Cleveland. Not as much notoriety. And I said the first Black mayor for Cleveland, but the first Black mayor in the country. Our new economic development person, Ted Carter, is from Cleveland. And this is one of the highly recommended books that he sent my. He also did, because they don't make it anymore, because it's such an older book, it wasn't cheap either. So it was about a $40, $50 buy to try to get this one. And then, you know, prior to reading this, I'm only a couple chapters in. It seems like it's really good. But I got to read, and Mark said that it was a classic and was surprised that I hadn't read it before, What It Takes, just about the 88 election. The first couple chapters were dry, talking about Bush and Dole as they were growing up. But it got very, very good towards the middle. And
man, that book.
Doesn't Richard Ben Kramer have some Maryland connection?
For sure. His daughter, I recall, covered O'Malley on the presidential beat. And, you know, that book was my only hope because we weren't polling anywhere. But Richard Ben Kramer once told a number of people that Martin O'Malley had what it takes. So I was relying solely on that through a whole Iowa campaign. It wasn't enough to get us there, but you've read that book cover to cover probably a couple times, Mark. What was your take on it?
Just the one time, although I was telling, I literally have it right here. I was just showing Damien, you were looking down. I have it happens to be on the shelf behind me. I said to Corey the other day, and we were talking about this, I want to go back and reread the Biden chapters because Biden is one of the featured candidates in the 88 campaign. You know, the book takes a slightly different approach than a lot of the great political campaign books. A lot of the political campaign books try to cover sort of the waterfront of everything happening, every candidate running. This book really does a deep dive into just a few of the candidates, including Bob Dole, George H.W. Bush, and Joe Biden, who at the time was sort of the young up and coming generational candidate, you know, very different than where he ended up as president. So I've actually been meaning to go back and sort of look at some of Kramer's discussion of Biden. I'd be curious to see how it holds up, you know, 40 years later, now that he's in charge.
Well, it's also one of these remarkable books that gives you a rare sense of the talent of these people. You know, It has a rare perspective in that it's saying, like, I know people make fun of politicians and they're the butt of jokes and there's maybe less respect today than there was 100 years ago for elected officials. You may be able to argue that. This book says, no. These people that are running for the highest office in the land are of the highest caliber. And he details that, you know, people that just shocked their parents when they come out of the womb. They're that kind of people. That may have been degraded over the last couple cycles, you could argue, but, you know, it's got to give you as elected official serving at the state level some sort of confidence that smart people do appreciate the good hard work that so many people overlook that you all do. That was clearly too much BS for either one of you two to react to. So give me another book, Mark.
Well, you called me on the right week. I'm actually in a little bit of a run on reading off of that book list we put together last year. I just finished A Political Education by Harry McPherson, which was the recommendation on our book list from Senator Van Hollen. McPherson was an aide to LBJ. He was an aide to him in the White House, and that part's interesting, but that's a really, you know, well-covered territory in a lot of books about the LBJ White House years, but he also worked for him in the Senate and sort of profiles the Senate of the 50s. And it's always fun as a state legislator. I know I'm not in the Senate, Corey, you don't have to remind me, but it's always fun to read about a legislative body. And, you know, obviously the Maryland House of Delegates is very different than the U.S. Senate of the 1950s for a lot of reasons that we could go into, but there's also some similarities. There's a funny line in there. It's something like, I'm going to butcher it, even though I just posted on Facebook recently, but it's something like, you know, the Senate can ask and poke, but it can never instruct when it comes to sort of the daily matters of policy. And, you know, I think that's how Corey and I probably feel a lot of the time. We can, you know, do joint chair report legislation or language, and we can send letters. But in terms of sort of the day-to-day activities of the agencies that we, you know, try to oversee, we can't instruct. And so it was interesting to read that these titans of the 1950s Senate had some of the same frustrations. And I'm also reading one of the recommendations from former delegate John Bohannon that he gave us, a little bit different than my sort of normal reading. It's called The Other 1%, about the Indians in America, Indians as in people from India, not American Indians or Native Americans. And it's a really interesting group of immigrants, incredibly small, although we don't necessarily feel that here because they're pretty heavily concentrated in Maryland, specifically in the DC area. And there were, you know, like less than a couple thousand Indians in America before the 1965 immigration laws changed. And obviously that surged quite a bit in a few different phases, including most recently, oddly, because of Y2K. If you remember Y2K, there was a huge effort to bring in people who could help sort out the information technology situation. And it led to this huge surge in immigrant families. So there's a lot to the book. It was an interesting recommendation by former delegate Bohannon that I've been enjoying.
Corey, how do you find time to read?
You know what? I try my best to make it a natural discipline. I do it early in the morning, and I usually do it before I go to sleep. And I always just try to get a chapter in. I think that it helps to remove me from a lot of the different spaces that I went through that journey for the day, but I also think that it starts my mind off in the right perspective. I try my best to read about things that I really, really genuinely care about, or just to help development. So I'm usually reading about history. I'm usually reading about leadership, and I'm usually reading about Black wealth, probably more in the 30s, 40s, 50s versus these times. And, you know, as we're having this conversation and I hear Mark and I'm thinking about McPherson in the Senate, and I had, a couple comments. I was thinking about this one book that I think that it really resonated with me. Heifetz writes on leadership a good bit. But it's like one of them, like that LBJ series, like you look like, no, like that author, just, you're not going to find somebody that can write in that manner, Cairo's manner, and just like make you feel like you're inside of the book living during that time. But Heifetz and leadership is really, really like, I read three of his books on leadership at this moment. And I don't think that it's very few folks that hit it on a nail just in reference to the direction that you should go. And I was amazed because I didn't find out about him until a couple of years ago, but like I put his book up one time and everybody had knew who he was in some capacity. But it's also a book that I also find myself purchasing for my friends that end up newly spaces of leadership too.
When you talk about reading up on Black wealth, talk to me a little bit about that. You come from a district that is probably the farthest thing from Black wealth. How do you relate? How do you relate those two things? How do you use it as an inspiration, or are there struggles and problems with Black wealth that people don't realize? I mean, obviously the huge Tulsa experience was horrific, but I'd love to get your point of view on how you balance all those considerations.
You know what? So I tell you, I learned from yourself. I learned from Mark. I learned from my colleagues, and you grow each and every day. But one of the things that you think about, especially in Black communities, is that history. So like, if I go into my schools, I do try my best to push my young people. I ask them the question, like, do you know who A.G. Gaston was right there in Alabama? And kind of what he left over. So it's not just about what he done, but like how he still transcends in Alabama and like, and still left the impact. I asked the question, you know, do they know about Herman Russell in Atlanta? One of the folks that under Maynard Jackson's time was the developer for that airport, where they talked about how Maynard had pressured and made sure that there was fair representation in reference to those folks that were developing it. But his impact is still left at this moment. I think about our young people, and I say, even right here in Baltimore, do you know who Reginald F. Lewis is? You know, like one of the first Black millionaires in our country, and the deal that he done with Beatrice International. And that's important to kind of know, because I tell my young folks, like, that could be you tomorrow. That could be you 5-10 years from now.
You think the book is sort of the quickest way for them to get caught up on that?
I think that sometimes if you don't have that level of mentorship or it's not something that you see, that like a book is the best way to get there. So like if you're not seeing it on a daily basis, you need to figure out how to make this one of your natural disciplines. One of the books that I buy for my young people, because these books, the other ones that I mentioned to you are probably more thick, but Black Fortunes by this brother, Shamari Wells, he wrote about like the first five Black millionaires. And the thing that I more likely like to emulate is the guy, O.W. Gurley. He kind of ran Memphis and like he was the bank. He was the supermarket. He was where you did extracurriculum activities. And I just think like that's what bosses do, man. They not just take care of themselves. They not just take care of them families, but they figure out how to make sure that the community thrives as a whole. And like that's the behavior that I would like to emulate. I'm doing it on a policy piece, so I can't always think about wealth from a personal standpoint. But like I think about like how do you, that's how you create community and that's how you build it up. And that's why I think it's important for my other folks.
Mark, we're talking about this. You have sort of a bird's eye view from Montgomery County, which obviously is or maybe not obviously is known one of the wealthier counties in the DMV, but also has, you know, real challenges. When you look at the Black empowerment of the business community in Atlanta, Georgia, or Chicago, Illinois, it seems to have a lot more verve and connection and top of place in the community, in those states, than I tend to see in Maryland with Baltimore. And I'm just wondering if Mark, you have any reaction to that, or if you have any thoughts about that.
Yeah, obviously, it's always interesting to hear Corey talk about these topics. And I've read some of the books he's recommended over the years, but not all of them. And it's just interesting. It shows the biases of your upbringing. And, you know, I was, you know, raised to read books about Kennedys and Roosevelts, which I know Corey's read also. He was raised to read, you know, more books about Black leaders, although I know he also reads about white leaders. And it's just, you know, interesting. We come from very different places, even though we have a lot of shared interest. And, you know, there are a lot of incredible Black leaders, wealthy and otherwise, in Montgomery County in the broader DC area, but Prince George's County in particular is a very wealthy majority Black suburb. One of the books that was on our list from last year was I think it's called Black Power in the Suburbs. It was the recommendation of Delegate Eric Barron, soon to be, knock on wood, our U.S. attorney, a very powerful position for an African American. About the sort of transition of Prince George's County from more white, somewhat more rural community to a real place of Black power and wealth. And I know, you know, for some reason people don't give it its proper due. Maybe it's because it's next to or near places like Montgomery and Howard County, which are, you know, extremely wealthy. But Prince George's County is, you know, in many ways an incredible success story of Black political power and Black.
Yeah.
Wealth.
And you know what it makes me wonder, Corey, it makes, you know, that's Wayne Curry, right? And Atlanta and Chicago had incredible mayors that put that as a priority, which was like a sharper break from the segregation Jim Crow experience. In Baltimore, we had William Donald Schaefer in 15 years. He's a fan favorite amongst suburban whites like myself. But if you dig deep, you got to wonder, like, if Billy Murphy would have won that race against William Donald Schaefer, would Baltimore be in a position like Prince George's County is today, like Atlanta is today? You know, that's a serious question I have.
I think a lot of us ask that question each and every time. You know, you kind of see the history repeats itself, and that's why it's important to read for folks to be able to kind of understand. And like you see a lot of the races in Baltimore kind of reflect themselves. And I do ask myself the question, like, what would it look like during a time if, you know, some folks may say, even if Clarence Sue Burns would have stayed there, you know, what would that have looked like? You could do a whole bunch of shoulda, coulda, wouldas, but I do we have to like make sure that we learn from lessons in the past, and that's how we're going to move towards in the future. They say if you don't know your history, then you kind of
well, that's why you're in the Senate and I got a podcast. So talk to me about transportation. This is a big issue that, you know, it's one of these issues that to me sounds like kind of sometimes it's a luxury issue that's talked about amongst progressives in my community. We talk about transit, we talk about rail, but then anytime that stuff comes into our affluent communities, we don't want to talk about it as much. Or, you know, you look, I was just down in Reston, Virginia, and I looked down at the magnificent infrastructure advancements they've been placing down there on the Dulles Toll Road, Dulles Corridor, the metro there, walking and biking lanes. Their infrastructure investment there is amazing. And then I look up in parts of Maryland and I just see it, you know, you see the same infrastructure literally that you saw 130 years ago. I'm wondering what books you all can read or what things that you all are picking up that can kind of inspire us all out of those boxes that we find ourselves in, whether it's the equity box or the Yimby Nimby box. I'd love to hear your take on transportation.
Yeah, I mean, I would just note that, I mean, you're certainly right that oftentimes people who say they support transit get a little less supportive when it's close to them. What's odd about that is transit is great economically. And I live in a successful area, Bethesda. I can walk to the Bethesda Metro. And while there are still people in my neighborhood who probably are upset the metro is there, for most people, it's been a huge net positive. And I think eventually once the Purple Line is complete, and that's, you know, a great frustration is even where Maryland is investing in infrastructure, it's not necessarily going that well because some of what I would call mismanagement of the Purple Line. But that's also going to be just an incredible economic opportunity, not only for the people around the stations, but also connecting Prince George's and Montgomery County in a tighter way than they ever have been before. Obviously, we spend a lot of time in the legislature on all areas of the state, but Baltimore does take up a disproportionate share. There's a budgetary reason for that, which is that Baltimore's local transit service is run by the state transit agency, which is a little unusual. Most states don't run local transit agencies. I think New Jersey is another example where that happens, but it's atypical. And so I find myself spending a lot of time focusing on issues in Baltimore. And in fact, a couple months ago, I was up there. I made a particular point of riding. I was very familiar with the light rail from having gone to school there, but I spent some time riding the actual subway line, which I had not been on previously, and the bus system a little bit, which I hadn't been on since the Link sort of system was put in place. So we definitely spend a lot of time on it. It requires investment and it requires time. And unfortunately, on the transit side, the current administration hasn't shown a huge interest in investing that money and investing that time. And when we've tried to tee it up for them, passing Senator McRae's transit investment bill, that was, you know, met by a veto from the governor. So it's there's a lot left to do.
Senator?
Damien, I think he's being very humble, but we got one of the sharpest minds on transportation, and everybody just kind of like hold tight to their seat when Mark Corman is on a rant or you're in the crosshairs. But like, because I think that iron sharpens iron, you know, this transportation space is just in what, as you stated it too, when you think about developing cities, developing jurisdictions, like the transportation is right, that it's moving in the right direction. And that's one of the ways that you grow a city. Because of the positions that we hold, being the subcommittee chair for the transportation, I get the opportunity to learn about, as Mark stated, the Purple Line, 270, 495, WMATA, and going through that journey. We have up here in our metro area, the East-West connection, and figuring that out, what does that look like long-term? But Mark hit the nail on the head in reference to like Senate 199, House Bill 114. My colleague, Brooke Learman, is the crossfile, and Mark did yeoman's work just helping us lift this and get this across across the finish line, but making sure that we invest in infrastructure. Damian, this isn't one of the sexy things that people get to see every day when you're investing in the infrastructure, but it's a very, very important piece in longevity, just for our young people, for our kids, our grandkids, and things of that nature. And we have to do it. We cannot neglect it until you see it on the news and then they're shutting down a piece of the subway or things of that nature for several months because of the failed neglect. So I hope that we can get to the 29 votes that's necessary in the Maryland State Senate. I should say I feel very confident that we're going to get to the 29 votes that we need in the Maryland State Senate and the 85 votes that we need in the Maryland House of Delegates to get that across the finish line. But when it comes to books to help change and shape my perspective, and I know Mark had already read this because when I put it up, I was like, man, why did it take me so long to get there? I think about this one, Walkable Cities. Does he live in your jurisdiction or he live in D.C., Mark?
I think he's in D.C.
Okay. But like Walkable City was a good one for me because I heard all these ideas put forward by some of my colleagues. And I'm like, here's where they're stealing the ideas from that standpoint, just to make sure that, you know, you can walk to your school. A lot of our young people are getting driven to school when we typically walk to school. You know, why folks are a little bit heavier than they were in the 70s, 80s and 90s. Because we don't walk as much as we should, but also that a lot of this stuff from getting to the counties and how we've treated our urban jurisdictions was very intentional. And we need to make sure that we're thinking about what does complete streets look like when we're thinking about a real neighborhood and how do you thrive in a neighborhood. So that was one of the books that I read probably 2 or 3 years ago that helped the shape and understands the thinking of some of my colleagues, but also really put in a simplistic way. Because sometimes folks be talking and they're just talking so far ahead of you that you're like, I don't really understand. But like in a simplistic way of why this is important.
And I'll give you two more books on the sort of infrastructure investment point, one local, one from the West Coast. The local one's The Great Society Subway by Zach Schrag. It's about the building of the DC area metro system. Kind of amazing if you think about it, that the federal government, two states and DC all sort of came together on a cohesive system that has many shortcomings that Corey has heard me talk about many times, but, you know, connects pretty far flung areas into the downtown DC area, you know, mostly successfully. Obviously, again, there's some shortcomings there, and I don't want to downplay some of the serious safety issues that have happened over the years and some of the funding issues, but you know, it mostly in non-COVID times, you know, that system gets hundreds of thousands of people to and from work every day, Herculean effort. And then the other book is Railtown. I can't remember the author, but it's about the construction of transit in Southern California, not necessarily thought of as a very transit-friendly place. So there's been some real strides there, but it's very disjointed. It's a lot of different systems that aren't necessarily well connected, and some funny decisions were made over the years. For example, if you go down the Imperial Highway, I think it's 105 towards LAX, there's a train that runs right down the middle, similar to the one in on the Dulles Toll Road that you were mentioning, Damian. But instead of turning towards the airport so people could ride to the airport on a train, which seems very convenient, it turns the other way towards now a pretty rundown area of office buildings. But when they were designing the system originally, there were a lot of Cold War area defense contractors over there that they thought were going to go to work. They thought no one would want to take their suitcase on the train to the airport, which I think is totally wrong. But they thought those people would ride to work. Well, those jobs mostly went away with the Cold War ending. But the train, obviously, you know, it's a long-term investment. It still turns the wrong way off of the highway. But a couple of good reads on transit investment.
I got a tough question for Delegate Mark Corman, and I want Senator McCray to help out with an answer after Delegate Corman gives me his thoughts. Watching your career, watching you in the legislature, following you on Twitter, you know, you're clearly one of the most disciplined, well-informed elected officials I've seen, okay? You're like, thanks, whatever. But let me tell you this. If I have those tools that you have, I got to ask myself, am I more powerful as an advocate for a particular policy perspective, especially on transportation, or can I get more done as a convener in this space? Maybe less of an advocate, more of a convener, because you have the capacity to develop trust through your knowledge share and pull people together. So I ask you that, what you think. advocate versus convener as a way to move the ball forward for what you and your constituents care about. And then we're going to have our political consultant, Corey McCray, tell us what the right answer is.
Well, see, I think one of the fun things about being in the legislature is that you actually get to do both of those things. Now, it might depend on the issue a little bit. No one's going to view me as an unbiased observer when it comes to WMATA, right? The DC area metro system. That's my passion. It's why I originally ran for office, was to bring more funding, attention, and oversight and safety to that system, which, you know, knock on wood, I think we've had a little bit of success in doing. But on a lot of other issues, we do get to use in the case of Corey and me, our subcommittee chair seats to be that kind of convener. You know, we had an issue last year. I don't want to get into too much detail, though you can dig it out of the public records. But my wonderful colleagues in the Senate sent some interesting language over about the Port Administration and tolls that are paid by some folks in Baltimore County. That was going to be pretty problematic for the port, I'll put it that way. It was going to deprive them of some resources that they needed. And I think Corey fell on the floor laughing just now. And I was able to sort of work with our friends in Baltimore County and our colleagues in the Senate to come up with sort of a third way solution, you know, maybe for some of those reasons you said, or maybe just because I wasn't as sort of living it day to day the way they were, that I think came up with a good result for everybody. So that's put in the great jobs of being in our seats of running for office and serving in the legislatures. You do get to do that. And it's also one of the nice things about being in a body our size, which there's a lot of us, there's a lot of coalitions to deal with, a lot of different parties, a lot of different interests, but it's not so big that you can't know everybody, you can't text or call everybody and sort of figure out how to navigate through different issues.
I want to hear it from your favorite.
Damien, I'm going to get you to repeat the question, please. Repeat the question.
Just look, I can ask you the same question, but I want you to answer this as if you're Mark's political advisor, okay? Which is, you got very strong command of this issue area, transportation. People trust you that you're, when you bring facts to the table, you know, that if you look them up and down, you're not going to be able to challenge his facts. He's, you know, bringing it together in an artful way. So is he more valuable to his constituency and his cause as a sort of chairman, convener, pulling everybody together? Or is he more powerful as more of a singular advocate for, you know, transit per se? What, any advice there for our delegate?
So first, Mark knows these couple of things, that everybody knows that you have to have your I's dotted and T's crossed when talking to Mark Corman about transportation. And the one beautiful thing is, first, sometimes, and I've seen this not with Mark, but in other situations where people think that the people are subject matter experts and they're bullshit. So like, because they've always been a trusted source, they wing it and they're not, and you can jam them up if you're also have the talents and gifts. But at the end of the day, Mark knows that in order to survive or in order to be successful in a number of these conversations, you just need to know more than a little bit of everybody. You have to kind of be in that game, know that space a little bit more. And what happens is you'll see people tend to fall back from that standpoint. One theory of being the transportation, I think that what happens is he's then being able to build capital because he knows the Baltimore issues, he knows the Southern Maryland issues, the Eastern Shore issues, the Western Maryland issues, that he can then build capital and bring more resources back to his respective district because he's helping out folks over that immediate issue, but you're building capital for the long-term piece of it. So I think that he's in a very unique space that everybody don't get to occupy because they're not, you know, he can hold that transportation subject, but like he does a multitude of, but like folks fear him in that space. And it's a lot to be said for that, but I would continue to occupy the space that he's doing, which is the convener, the chairperson, and solving some very difficult. When you can help in ensuring that $2 billion over a 6-year period is injected into the, you know, and MTA touches every jurisdiction, but like being able to help with that infrastructure piece is like, that was a big puzzle. And he was the one that was crunching the numbers, sending saying, hey, I think that it did, and being able to bounce off and get that small group of people to help ask some of these pointed questions. He's intimately into the purple line. He's intimately in this 270 piece of it. And a lot of times when I get to talk to the transportation secretary, I say, hey, man, I need to make sure that I'm just keeping up with Mark on some of these subjects inside of my region. And I want to make sure that I'm there. So I do study up. But I started off iron sharpens iron and either you rise to the occasion or you're not at the occasion. And I think I try my best to be at the occasion.
Let me just say, this is all very flattering, but you know, the real political dynamo on this podcast is Corey McRae. I mean, I actually got in trouble the last time you convened us, Damian, by making a reference to Corey's political future. And I had to call the person currently in that office to explain to them that I was just, you know, making an offhand compliment about Corey, but it's true. I mean, the sky's the limit for him. And if you follow him on social media, I mean, you'll see a person who's not just sitting around reading books and mouthing off at hearings, but someone who's really building their community up. And he really applies a lot of what he's learned about, you know, in particular Black wealth and community building, to how he is operating in his district and is really bringing a lot of life to his area. So it's a pleasure to not only watch him work, but sometimes get to lend a hand to his work as well.
I don't just retweet. I don't retweet Corey McRae. I basically go on LinkedIn and say, I'm going to give up on Baltimore politics and give it all to Corey McRae, because he works harder, he's smarter, and has a more wonderful network than anything I'll be able to do. So,
I was just glad.
Damian. I admire you both. I admire you both, but nobody wants to hear us saying nice things about each other in this, on the lobbying community. So I want to get a couple last recommendations for you. You've got the whole lobbying community listening to this. It's really remarkable how many people do listen to this, and they listen to the whole thing. It's crazy. Can you tell them what they should be looking out for from your point of view? And Mark, we're so nice to you because you're from Montgomery County. We know that comes with its own hangups, and you fight through them every day. You know, that's why we're looking out for you. But can you look out for this community and tell them what they ought to be focused on if they want to be ready for this legislative session coming up?
I mean, you know, I would always refer people back to that book list we put out last year, which was not our recommendations, though we had some of ours in there, but really came from folks all over the, all over the sort of Annapolis scene, including some of our lobbying and advocacy leaders who had suggestions. And I'll also shout out Maryland Matters, which was kind enough to post our whole list, had sort of a little bit of a follow-up where they also had some additional recommendations that were not on our list, but a lot of good reading recommendations in there as well. And I'll also say, Damian, since our last one of these, I did read The Last Hurrah that you recommended, which was a terrific read. So thanks for that suggestion.
Thank Tim Maloney and Colleen Martin Lauer for that one. Corey, what do you got? Recommendation? It could be any kind of advice you have for these advocates that are going to be coming to see you in Annapolis or on their Zoom screen.
Yep. Mark stole the words out of my mouth. Like, I think that book list was really, really a good space to be in. And I would definitely push folks right in that direction. Touche with The Last Hurrah, because I also was able to read about the old time politics right there.
Come on, Corey. We know that all the precinct org part of that you still do, going to every event every night, you know, getting every
funeral. I did like the hand to hand that was going on, you know, the personal feel that was going on in there. I could relate with that one. The thing that I would just think about is like just always be looking to sharpen your skills. I think that, you know, and that's best done through a book. And that's just solely my opinion. It's a number of phenomenal leaders, but you have to build on the leadership that they've left and figure out how to emulate that, but also be better than that. And always just feel free to reach out is one of the things I say. But my friend Theo Rogers gave me a book, Never Eat Alone. And that's what this is all about, it's especially in the General Assembly space that we're in. It's about relationships. It's about working hard, but like relationships help to get you to that next stage and never forget that.
I got a couple for you. The Bo Biden memoir. If you ever want to know, like, it, you know, it gets all kinds of praise and critiques because Hunter is so brutally honest about addiction issues. But if you're me reading it, it's a book about
a great Catholic family with some significant disabilities to it. And I could relate to almost everything in that book. So I recommend Hunt's book. And then also The Daily Miracle, C. Frazier Smith. You're going to be seeing some interesting action in the news space. I saw Corey McRae hanging out with Stuart Bainham and Ted Venatoulis. So we've got some big news coming out of Baltimore soon enough. I recommend The Daily Miracle from C. Frazier Smith. And then I'm going to shock you two Democrats and talk about Charles Koch. This is for my buddies on both sides of the aisle. Charles Koch basically says in this new book, Believe in People, you know, partisanship, boy, we really screwed up. You gotta listen to the people. The power is in the people. So remarkable message there from the libertarian community and from the foundation community. And then my last one is The Cover Wife, which is Dan Fesperman. He's written a number of these kind of like intelligence intrigue books, and he was a former Baltimore Sun foreign correspondent, and he is his bride is the head of the Save Our Sun campaign that and the education reporter there at the Sun that is so well known, Liz Bowie. So those are some thoughts from me. Any last thoughts, Senator McCray?
Man, just thank you for the work that you do, Damian. Just a reference to just lifting our state, lifting our city. It's definitely important. I always enjoy any time that I can get to spend time with my colleague, Delegate Corman, and just hyper-focusing, you know, just from a self-improvement standpoint. I can't say it enough.
Hey, let me cut you off again, Delegate Corman, and say to both, ask you both, do you guys have any political events, community events, or fundraisers we ought to know about coming up?
I think that everybody know, you know, I'm going to Taz. I don't usually go, but it's happening in October this year. So, like, it's not going to be so hot. that's the one that I got immediately on my mind because I think it's next week or the week after next.
I've never done it, man. I want the full Twitter report. Mark, what do you got?
You do not want to see your T-shirt sweating. And no. I was like,
yeah, we don't need to travel ridiculous. Out of Baltimore for that.
There's so much better weather,
right? We don't need to travel out of Baltimore for that. We got
And I think that my colleague Daryl Barnes will want me to lift up. He's the chairman of the Black Caucus. They have the gubernatorial forum that's happening over there at BWI Airport in the coming weeks, and just making sure that they focus the gubernatorial focus right there on a Black agenda. So I'm glad of his leadership. I believe that is 60 plus. Black Caucus members, but I'm sure that he would be remiss if I didn't mention that.
Yeah, my big community event right now is knocking on doors and letting folks know that I want to keep doing this job for another 4 years. Just filed for re-election with the rest of the District 16 team. Although I will say, like Corey, I try to knock on doors outside of the election cycle as well to keep up with what's going on with folks in the district and what's on people's minds. And Damian, this is my thank you. It's always fun to sort of talk about books. And one of the great things about that book list last year was that for a couple of weeks, that was sort of in the Annapolis zeitgeist a little bit there. You know, what are you reading? What should people read? And it's always great to see that that people are, as Corey would say, sharpening their skills by keeping up on their intellectual rigorous side as well.
Well, I want to see those. I want to see those. You got the cute. You both have the cutest door knocking teams in Maryland politics, I think. And that's a heavily rivaled space. And I hope to see you both out maybe in Columbia, Maryland, on October 10th for Books in Bloom for Nicole Hannah Jones. Our good friend Jonas Jacobson represents the good people out there at Howard Hughes and some of the nonprofits that are trying to get a jug handle out there into Meriwether so all those community groups can get in and out of there a little quicker. I'm sure he'd love to show you that. And he has a book recommendation for you, which is Better Places, Better Lives, the biography of Jim Rouse. And then Greg Fitchett, who's the president of Howard Hughes. His book recommendation is Anything by Laura Littman. She's a Wild Lake High School graduate and author of 20 books, including Wild Lake, which is a wonderful novel. So thank you all for joining us. Senator Corey McCray, Delegate Mark Corman, two of the best and brightest, not just in Maryland, but in any legislative body across the country. Thanks so much for joining us on the Lobby Pod.
Thank you.
Appreciate you, brother.
All right. Thanks, guys.